Chapter 26. In the summer before my junior year at Placerville, Joe and I drove up to Bangor to spend a weekend with Joe's brother, who had a summer job working for the Bangor Sanitation Department. Pete McKennedy was 21, a fantastic age, it seemed to me. I was struggling through the open sewer that is 17, and going to the University of Maine, where he was majoring in English. It looked like it was going to be a great weekend. On Friday night, I got drunk for the first time in my life, along with Pete and Joe and one or two of Pete's friends, and I wasn't even very hungover the next day. Pete didn't work Saturdays, so he took us up to the campus and showed us around. It's really very pretty up there in summer, although on a Saturday in July, there weren't many pretty co-eds to look at. Pete told us that most of the summer students took off for Bar Harbor or Clear Lake on weekends. We were just getting ready to go back to Pete's place when he saw a guy he knew slouching down toward the steam plant parking lot. "Scrag!" he yelled. "Hey, Scrag!" Scrag was a big guy wearing paint-splattered faded jeans and a blue work shirt. He had a drooping sand-colored mustache and was smoking an evil-looking little black cigar that he later identified as the original Smoky Perote. It smelled like slowly burning underwear. "How's it hanging?" he asked. "Up a foot," Pete said. "This is my brother Joe and his buddy Charlie Decker," he introduced. "Scrag Simpson."
"Howdy doody," Scrag said, shaking hands and dismissing us. "What you doing tonight, Peter?"
"Thought the three of us might go to a movie."
"Don't do that, Pete," Scrag said with a grin. "Don't do that, baby."
"What's better?" Pete asked, also grinning.
"Dana Collette's throwing a party, Silver Star Hero," Dick said, and raised his knee, placing it expertly in the big muscle of Ted's thigh. Ted screamed. His eyes bulged and rolled toward me, the eyes of a horse staved on a high fence. "Please, please, Charlie, please!" And then Nancy Kaskin stuffed a large wad of notebook paper into his mouth. He tried to spit it out, but Sandra rammed it back in. "That will teach you to spit," she said reproachfully. Harmon knelt and pulled off one of his shoes. He rubbed it in Ted's inky hair and then slammed the sole against Ted's chest. It left a huge, grotesque footprint. "Admit one," he crowed. Tentatively, almost demurely, Carol stepped on Ted's stockinged foot and twisted her heel. Something in his foot snapped. Ted blubbered. He sounded like he was begging somewhere behind the paper, but you couldn't really tell. Pigpen darted in spider-like and suddenly bit his nose. There was a sudden black pause. I noticed that I had turned the pistol around so that the muzzle was pointed at my head. But of course that would not be at all cricket. I unloaded it and put it carefully in the top drawer on top of Mrs. Underwood's plan book. I was quite confident that this had not been in today's lesson plan at all. They were smiling at Ted, who hardly looked human at all anymore. In that brief flick of time, they looked like gods, young, wise, and golden. Ted did not look like a god. Ran down his cheeks in blue-black teardrops. The bridge of his nose was bleeding, and one eye glared disjointedly toward no place. Paper protruded through his teeth. He breathed in great white snuffles of air. I had time to think. "We have got it on. Now we have got it all the way on." They fell on him.